listening to Sherpa Legends, a presentation of the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast and our special edition Sherpa Legends.
Conversations with men and women who have achieved legendary status in youth ministry.
Hey everyone, I'm Matthew McCabe.
This is Steve Anderson, and we are really excited about today's episode.
Oh man, it was so great.
We had the joy and the privilege of being part of the live podcast booth at the National Youth Workers Convention. We had a slot in there, and we were able to have a great conversation with the legendary Duffy Robbins.
Absolutely, and his wife Maggie was gracious enough to join him to bring a whole nother aspect of their story together. So what a great conversation.
Now, when we went into the conversation, we had some technical problems, which, as you would expect, because we're 50-year-old doofuses.
Exactly. How did they expect two guys in their 50s to be able to figure out how to do a live podcast in front of a studio audience?
We broke five laptops along the way and a sound system.
Yeah, I think we did. We were a part of burning that little.
I don't think that was our fault.
I don't think so either. But it happened while we were there. So anyway, so we lost a little bit of time on the front end of our interview. And we had a very subscribed amount of time in the first place.
Yes. And we have such a great story to hear from Duffy and Maggie. They've been married for over 40 years. And Duffy's been a youth ministry legend forever.
Forever.
I mean, I've heard him speak so
many
times.
When you think youth ministry, Duffy's one of the first people that comes to your mind, for sure.
And so we felt bad that we didn't have more time. But we want to shout out Anthony Taylor, Sam Pedersen, and
Marty Estes
for helping us out.
Came to our rescue in our moment of dire need, and they rescued the live broadcast. And those that were there that day were witness to a great conversation from two just genuinely wonderful people.
Yeah, and it was really cool to have Maggie join the conversation too, because she's a spiritual director, and you got to figure anybody who can help her husband through 40 years plus of youth ministry life has to be a special person.
A legend, actually.
Yeah. Sure. So, without any further delay, we would like to present to you our live conversation with Duffy and Maggie Robbins from NYWC.
Welcome to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast, our first ever live recording in front of a studio audience here at the National Youth Workers Convention.
Oh man, we are recording our Sherpa Legend episode, and we are honored today to have a power couple in the youth ministry world. Welcome, Duffy and Maggie Robbins. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you much. Thanks for letting us be here.
Yeah.
Excited.
So, Duffy, before we begin today, we've never met before, but you've influenced my life in significant ways, and I'm sure that's true for others in the room. We've already heard some stories. The first time I heard you speak was in 1990 in Orlando, Florida, at this free church event called Challenge.
I remember that.
And I still remember your talk, which that'll do your heart good to know that I remember what you said.
Yeah, that's encouraging.
You challenged us to stand up if we knew a verse in which Jesus claimed to be God, and hardly anybody in the room stood up. And I just remember being very convicted about that. And that was back when it was my first big conference experience with students as a volunteer. And that whole experience just kind of propelled me into youth ministry from that point forward, which was just an amazing thing. So I was ashamed that day, but you inspired me to pursue youth ministry. So thank you.
Shame is a huge part of my ministry. My gift to the church.
Yeah, thank you.
People feel bad.
Thank you. And we also have a Grove City connection.
Yes, we do. One of my students, a guy with whom I have breakfast almost every other week, Weston Barrett. I just was found out, and he's just a stellar guy. And so I meet with him, and I have them in class, but I also meet with them in sort of a mentor group of guys. And so, yeah, and I'm thinking any ministry that produces guys like Weston has got to be a pretty doggone good youth ministry. So way to go.
That's good to hear. Thanks. I'm also a graduate of Grove City. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, long time ago.
Cool. I feel kind of left out right here.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, my friend.
I had Froyo with Duffy last year at the DYM 200 conference. Right, I won the little sidekick game, and he took me out for Froyo.
Yeah, and I think, didn't I make you feel ashamed about something?
You may have. We have a common friend in Ed Travis.
Oh, yeah,
who came through
your
program at Eastern. Yeah,
great guy.
Yeah, good guy.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Very cool.
Well, the National Youth Workers Convention has been a big part of both of your stories. So when and how did you guys get connected with NYWC?
You start, and I can fill in gaps, maybe.
Okay. I just want to make sure Maggie's
mic. Is my mic on?
It is. Yeah, I can see you recording right here.
Sorry, yep. Live audience.
Yeah, well, so back in about 1985, I think I started at Eastern University. I'd been a youth pastor for probably 10, 12 years, and then I went to teach youth ministry at Eastern University in St. Davis, Pennsylvania. And Tony Campola and I shared an office together. Tony, although I'd gone to some conventions as a youth worker, just like folks in this room, I wasn't speaking at them or anything. And anyway, I think Tony said, you know, to Tick and to Mike or somebody, hey, you ought to talk to this guy Duffy, I think he could maybe do that. And so Tick wrote to me and said, we'd like to consider you for our resource seminar team. And I can still remember, he said, now this is, it's probably just going to last about a year. We're probably going to do this for a year or so. And we don't know, you may not like us and we may not like you. And, I mean, it's very cordial, but he's kind of saying it's a chemistry thing. It's not, he was trying to sort of let me know if they didn't bring me back, he prepared me for that. And, but so I did that year. I did the resource seminar team that year. And we had a great time. And that's where I started speaking at the convention. That most of us who did the resource seminar team, we also spoke at the YS convention, and I'm sure for YS it was a way to promote their seminar speakers by having them at the convention. So that's probably the first time I actually started speaking at the YS convention, and I think I've probably spoken at all of them since then.
I do believe.
And most of the time Maggie comes with me.
Yeah, and so when that initially started, I would come just as a wife, and actually back then volunteers were used for the registration. And so, and that was back in the day when if anyone showed up with a tie on, we had scissors at the ready to cut the tie to let them know, okay, we're not in business. This is for you to be ministered to and to be honored in the role that you have as a youth worker, and to bring it down and have some fun while you're here.
So you cut ties off.
Ah, man, yeah.
That's
and it
awesome.
Was, and I hope that they weren't too expensive a tie that I was cutting. But then through the years, I came into a place of my own spiritual formation and training, and being called into the ministry of spiritual direction. And Beth Slevkov, who oversees the spiritual direction here, actually, God bless her, allowed me to come alongside youth workers as I was being trained as a spiritual director. It's such a gift. And so I've been doing that now for about 16 years.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Coming alongside.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
How have you seen the convention change the landscape of youth ministry over all these years?
First of all, the convention itself, of course, has changed a lot. I remember when I first started coming, and I think this is kind of actually an interesting observation, that when I first started coming, there were a lot of vendors promoting curriculum and how to teach the Bible. There are very few of those now. A lot more of the vendors are focusing on how to give your kids some kind of experience. It might be media experience or just fun experience or mission experience. Mm-hmm. But I think that's actually a metaphor of something that's not super healthy about youth ministry. And so that's an observation that I think is kind of trenchant in terms of kind of where we are and what we need to think about. But I think one of the big changes, I can almost remember when it happened, but there was also a real shift at one point where we went from making the convention sort of a training event. Well, it still, of course, is largely a training event, but also I remember from Mike, he really felt a commitment and a burden to make it an event of encouragement and affirmation. That's when we started doing the phone calls from the stage, and some of you guys in the room will remember that. Mm-hmm. And it was a decided turn. I mean, it was an intentional, obvious, observable change, you know, where that happened. And so that was a change in the convention. And I think probably part of that reflects too in youth ministry land, a sense that people were staying in it longer. We wanted to affirm that and reward that, mm-hmm. and also recognize that that's a painful adventure sometimes. You know? Yeah. And so we really wanted to champion that and sort of say, hey, let's own part of the role of affirming and celebrating this tribe of people. So I think that was a significant change. And then there was the other change I would mention is that when we first started doing the conventions, of course they were quite a bit smaller at first, but there was a point at which there were other conventions in the marketplace, and so you know, youth specialties had to really like up their game in terms of production, mm-hmm. you know, values, and which was, it's amazing. I mean, you know, those of us here at the opening session the other night, was just, you know, or mm-hmm. the other afternoon, it's just amazing, you know, all the different stuff. But I think you lose something in that, you know, you, I just remember Iaconelli or whoever making announcements from the stage, and it was pretty much, it was sort of like a, it was more like a, I don't know, it just felt more informal. And and so there was, but that's been a shift. I think you get some gains and some losses with that. But
right.
I think that's probably another change I've noticed in the convention over the years.
Yeah.
But it's still, I still love that it's a place where you're going to get good training. You're going to celebrate our tribe, our guild, if you will.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that it really is about youth ministry and a calling that we sort of celebrate together. That's an important value.
Yeah. Maggie, how have you seen like the spiritual care, the right. spiritual direction, soul care part of it? Because I know that early in my time of coming to the convention that aside from the training, like mm-hmm. the soul care part of the convention was really prime for me.
Right. And we're finding that more and more that it's some people nowadays, because you can get these on CDs or what is that? What is
it? It's a download. Yeah,
download. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. See?
And 33 and a third, I think.
Because of that, that gives them the freedom to be able to come and tend to their own soul care and have found such a rich time of retreat, of coming away and mm-hmm. being with the one who's loving them more than any other, and that to tend to their own interior landscape, if you will, their own soul care, so that they can live and lead from the inside out, that they can mm-hmm. then in a somewhat healthier manner, because we are all sinners and saved by grace and grateful for it, but then going back into that exterior landscape. So the gift of retreat, the gift of coming away and being with and entering into sanctuary and the prayer stations and prayer chapel, having a quiet space, sleeping, holy resting if need be, but having that sacred listening ear of one who you can come and just be and share your story. May I add another piece that I've seen that has come into play is the technology. Podcasts back in, we'd had nothing of the technology. Right. There were no cell phones. So when you engaged with people, they were fully with you with nothing sitting here and no distraction of looking at texts or carrying on conversation here while we're talking here. And I remember when we were first asked to do a podcast, I'd never heard of such a thing, and I kept calling it a cod piece because I just didn't know what it was.
Oddly enough, we filled the room
with a cod piece.
We're doing a cod piece later tonight.
A lot of people left when they found out.
They were so disappointed. So it is.
There are fish bites next door. So
so the. It just, so that has changed how I think we relate to one another, how we are with one another. It can be used for great good, but it also can, just on so many levels, how do we hold you here when all this can be calling you away?
That's great. So we want to take you guys back in time,
okay,
back to when you met. How did you meet? Tell us about your family and some of those early years in youth ministry. How did you get called into this in the first place?
Aren't you kind to ask? Thank you. We met when I was in high school and he was in college and he was working with Young Life in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was in high school in Burlington, North Carolina. By the rules of Young Life, you are not to date high school girls.
That's right.
Yeah, you know the
good rule.
That's
a good rule.
It's a good rule.
Very good rule. But the caveat, I mean, he was in Charlotte, I was in Burlington. You know, there was distance there, 2 hours. I was working with a ministry called New Directions, which was a singing group of, it was an interracial ministry of high school and college students. And we'd go out almost every weekend presenting the gospel through what was then called contemporary Christian music. And it was during an Easter weekend when we were down at Myrtle Beach, set up on a flatbed truck in front of, I think it was called the pub. It was just a dive at Myrtle Beach. And the black guys, the African-American guys in our group would get up and do top 40 soul music to get the crowd in. And then the rest of us would go up there and then proceed on and ease them into this Christian music. Mm. And before those people knew what was happening, because they'd had a few, so they were feeling loose and getting into the soul vibe. And we went down and would talk to them one-on-one about Jesus. And so Duffy was one of those guys, not in the drinking realm.
No,
certainly
sober
not.
Probably in my right mind.
Right. He was dating another girl that was in this ministry that I was in.
That's unfortunate.
And but she was getting way too serious. And so he was open to finding other. And so that's how we started dating. I could go into more details about that. But we dated for 3 years.
3 years, yep.
So we got married when I was 20, you were 21.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was just...
Just a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maggie had just finished her sophomore year in college. Right. I tell my students now they can't believe that.
Right.
You know. And then I had told my parents that I would wait until after college, and so we got married the week after I graduated.
You kept your promise.
You kept your word.
I'm a man of my word. Absolutely. But yeah, that's how we met, and I started working with that ministry and that music ministry. And the guy that headed that up was a guy named J.L. Williams, and J.L. was one of the guys I think we kind of consider one of our principal mentors, and actually there are hundreds of people like us into whom J.L. poured his life, and who have had, you know, fruitful ministries and around the world. I mean, J.L. died about 2 years ago of a heart attack. He was a fireball. I mean, he had fire in his bones, and he was a reader, And there were pretty strict requirements in terms of what we had to do to be in New Directions. The focus was always more on, he read Master Plan of Evangelism. Robert Coleman was one of his professors at Asbury Seminary. And Master Plan was the book on which he sort of based his ministry, and subsequently the book that was hugely influential in my life in ministry, philosophy of ministry. But Coleman talks about in that book how Jesus had us, this public ministry to the multitude, but essentially he invested his whole life into 12 guys and counted on God to take those 12 and that's where everything was banked. And so that's kind of how JL approached it. We had the public ministry of New Directions. And we had some amazing adventures and just wonderful, because New Directions would do concerts pretty much anywhere. I mean, we did, obviously high school assemblies and churches and college campuses, but a lot of street ministry and shopping malls and setting up in front of a, I remember we did concerts in the Miami Democratic National Convention. I can't remember what year it was, but I mean, there was a riot in our, they had people actually came up on stage and we didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, it was, he loved that kind of thing. And of course, what's funny thing about it is he was probably about 30 something, 33 maybe when that happened. But back then, you get sued for doing something like that. But I mean, and then later that afternoon, after that kind of riot, he said, we were set up for another event, and they had National Guard guys on both sides of us to protect us in that one. But we learned a lot about ministry in different contexts. We did, because we also did prison ministry there. That's where I definitely learned a lot about communication but there was also requirements, like you had to memorize, 150 Bible verses, and we had to outline a book of the Bible every month. You had to read a book like Mere Christianity or Paul Little's How to Give Away Your Faith. These were kind of classics at the time. And so he really made the emphasis on discipling us. And even if you couldn't sing that well, that wasn't really the big deal, but you had to be willing to do those. You had to be willing to do those kind of requirements or you weren't going to be in there.
How did you get into the youth ministry world then from there?
Well, about 5 years into our marriage, Maggie contracted pregnancy.
Huh. And so that's an interesting way to state that.
Yeah. And
who did she get that from?
Yeah. Well, literally, she got it from me.
Oh.
But anyway, so the consequence of that was the doctor said to her on one occasion, you can't keep touring like this, because we would, we would travel a lot. I mean, we're out there on the road a lot. And especially after I got back from seminary at Gordon-Conwell, I worked full time for New Directions. JL passed off the leader of I became the director of the group and the main speaker and everything. So he didn't travel as much anymore. He wrote and did other things. So anyway, they said, you can't keep traveling like that. And so I knew, I didn't want to be a eunuch for the kingdom. I mean, we were leaving the next day on about a 3-week trip right after he told her that. So, I mean, the next day, literally I went, wow, I'm getting ready to say goodbye to her for 3 weeks, something. Mm-hmm. And I knew I didn't want to relive that experience very much. Mm-hmm. And so we decided then to sort of localize in some kind of ministry. Probably like some of you, I didn't really think I was going to do youth ministry. I never thought of it as an aspiration. I think I really didn't know much about it. I became a Christian my freshman year of college. Mm. And honestly, I think what I mostly wanted was just to get in the game. Evangelism, discipleship, missions. We talked about college ministry. But there is such a thing called a youth pastor, and it's something you can make a living at. There wasn't really much like that at the time. And so... So it wasn't anything one could aspire to. And I certainly wouldn't have aspired to say, I'm going to also speak and write books and stuff. They just didn't, that didn't exist.
Right.
Which I think was a healthy thing because it sort of kept your focus on, hey, try to be the best youth pastor you can be and just work on that. And, but that's when we sort of opened ourselves to say, okay, we're going to localize and entrench someplace mm-hmm. so I don't have to travel as much. And that's how we ended up this church, because I was speaking at all these events and sort of fronting for the group, we got a lot of job offers because, again, there weren't very many youth pastors mm-hmm. out there, and I was one they knew. And so mm-hmm. they'd say, hey, would you be willing to come here? So one of those churches was a church in Barrington, Rhode Island. It was timing-wise, we were on this tour. And so when they wrote, as opposed to just kind of blowing off the invitation, I said, well, let's give it a shot. And we looked at some other places, but we had done a concert at this place. It was beautiful, and people were awesome. So we ended up going there, and that was in 1978, I think it was, and something like that. And anyway, that was an awesome experience. I mean, it was really hard at times. But I remember thinking that this is just going to be a drag because I've been out sort of running with the Mustangs, and now I'm just going to have to go to...
Into the corral.
Into the corral, yeah. I'm just going to kind of...
Domesticated.
Graze. Yeah, I'm trying not to use stud language. But anyway, I was going to go to the corral, and I remember thinking it's going to be a drag. And to my utter astonishment, almost immediately, I loved it. And part of the thing was when I was at Gordon-Conwell, you know, like every other seminary, we had to do internships and field placements. Right. And I did two internships, both of which were as a local youth pastor, and both of which were a disaster. I mean, I hated them. I mean, I went to the field placement office because Maggie and I were very poor, and I said, I want the best paying job you've got. And they go, what denomination? I said, 50s? I didn't really care, whether it was what it was. We just, and so consequently, at a place like Gordon-Conwell, you have maybe, 800 students and a minimal number of evangelical churches within a 25 mile area. They were saturated. So they didn't have to pay anybody. So if you're going to get paid and you wanted to make more, and when I'm talking about money, I'm talking like I got paid $250 a month. But you had to go to just almost a dead church. Mm. And sure enough, that's exactly what it was. It turned out the first one was Unitarian. we had some great fruit there. But I remember not liking it and thinking, man, if this is what, it didn't alarm me that I thought youth ministry was a drag because I didn't think I'd ever do it. So it wasn't like, oh, man, I have to rethink God's will for my life. That church, I got fired there after the first year because of we can talk about that. Basically, they said, Duffy says that the pastor said that, you used the language of people being saved, and, we don't use that kind of language here. Mm-hmm. And so... anyway, I got fired there. I just didn't get rehired. It was only a one-year thing anyway, mm-hmm. so they didn't have to fire me. They said, we are going to rehire you. We really want you to come back, but then that changed. But anyway, the second church was also pretty dead, and so I remember, had I been thinking I really want to do youth ministry, I would have totally shifted my vocational goals, but I didn't. But when I took the job at Barrington, I had that in the back of my mind that is it going to be like that, and of course it's totally different because it was a different, totally different church congregation, and it's full time. So you're not trying to do five different things. And we were just immersed in it and we loved it. And then at that time there were about five other full-time youth pastors, in New England, and we all began to meet together once a month, every month, all day. And these are guys, Paul Borthwick, and who still does a lot of mission stuff. Dave Winch, who was working at Park Street Church in Boston, but he's been doing Young Life for years. And anyway, there were about five or six of these guys, And those are the guys that really galvanized in me a vision for long-term youth ministry. And one of the guys, Jack Gary and Ron Ward. And those guys are the ones that were really responsible for kind of helping me think about youth ministry as something you might do long-term. They had hoped we would all stay in New England, and they all did. Being from North Carolina, we really wanted to go back south at some point. But that group of guys was really pivotal in helping me kind of think about my vocation.
Mm-hmm. 41 years later.
Yeah, here we are.
Here you are.
I think I'm going to stick with it.
I like that. Maggie, how did you get drawn into the spiritual direction, you know, side of things?
Right. Probably from my own story of having raised, to finish that, we had two daughters who have since grown and gone married, and I have grandkids, and it's awesome. But as a result of those girls getting older, and then because we had made a commitment that I would not work, that I would be mom and raising these girls and discipling these girls as well as discipling the girls from our youth group, I never had a job. So when these girls are getting ready to leave, the what's next for Maggie was a significant question. And is this all there is? And through my own midlife crisis, if you will, God took me on quite the journey of a deeper looking into, is this all there is? Is there more in this new season of life, what God might be doing in the midst here? And I was in counseling, which is a very good thing to venture into if needed. And it was through that counseling and through a book that Duffy gave me by Richard Foster called Devotional Classics. And these are the highlighted writings of different writers through the ages, through the different streams of tradition of faith. And I found my home in evangelism, but what I was being drawn to was the more contemplative, the more mystical, and God was just inviting me. Little did I know, because I'd never heard of spiritual direction, but God was directing me to take a deeper look at my own true self and also the very character of God. And so he just took me on quite the journey, discovered a school of spiritual formation near my house, an hour away, because of a book that had been given to me called Basking in His Presence by Bill Volkman. And just being able to feel the nudgings, to feel the promptings of the Spirit to say, yes, go deeper with me. Just be with me for a bit to discover the what's next. And so this gentleman was speaking. Bill Volkman was right down the road speaking. I go to hear this man discover the school of spiritual formation. And after discerning, yes, this is where I am to go next, the next step, went to this school. And as a result, I was at that school as a student and then in training as a spiritual director when I discovered this ministry. And I can see God's hand because I'd been discipling girls in our youth group for years and years and years. God was taking that, okay, now let's take a look at what it would be to in spiritual direction to come along people of all ages and all gender and to come alongside to help them to pay attention to what God is doing in their life. And so it is an ancient ministry, but to have heard of it so late, so much later in life, I'm grateful because I probably wouldn't have been prepared or ready at any earlier time. So God's timing is perfect.
Yeah.
And as a result of that school of spiritual formation, and I'm so grateful for the impact that school had on my life and where it has led me, and we continue on, further on, deeper in.
And you've been married now for
42.
Oh, gosh, 48. 48 years.
Oh yeah,
wow.
48 years. That's right.
That's 42 years of your lifetime.
No, 46. Well, yeah, because we married in 73. So
73.
Yeah, so 46 years.
So
46.
Yeah, 46 years.
I was adding and he was subtracting. There's something
if
to
we
that.
Average it out, though, it's like yeah, 46, you know.
So a lifetime, your whole married life has been involved in ministry and in youth ministry. What has that been like, and how has that been a challenge and a blessing?
Oh, my gosh, and how long is the podcast? Yeah, it is... It has been both and a challenge and an absolute delight. We've not known anything else, and so we have.
And
been,
we got married so young. I mean,
that's right.
Right.
You know. Oh my
right.
gosh! Yeah. So okay, here in the early beginnings of this, our house was our home, and it and we would let people come at certain times, but we would shut the door. Mm. We know of others in youth ministry where they had an open door policy. You can come in at any time and stay as long as you. That was so not us. And so for us, just kind of working through our own way of being in this youth ministry and being a family and protecting that time and the importance of. And it's probably still evolving of roles within family, roles within ministry, but also the priorities of mm-hmm. ministry. The importance of ministry, we saw a lot of failed marriages as a result of workaholism.
Mm-hmm.
Just ministry comes first,
mm-hmm.
Bad priority.
Yeah.
So learning how to put God first individually and then within our family and then ministry.
What words of advice would you have for younger couples who hope to still be doing this when they reach a later stage in life?
Well, I can tell you that just to also kind of respond to your previous question, I think I'm really grateful for Maggie. Maggie is a real adventurer, and I think probably we both to some extent feel a little like Frodo. You know, on the one hand, we go, we're not made for perilous quests, but of course, we are in fact made for perilous quests. And Gandalf said, I get it, but you have to use such strength and hearts and wits as you have, because here you're going to have to do this thing with the ring. And I feel like it's been an amazing adventure, and so it's been, places where you're just going, holy cow, this is scary, but wow, that was amazing. And then sometimes, in ministry, times of tears, and you just go, man, we're blowing it. We're at the, Mount of Doom, and this is, going to be trouble. And of course, we have church boards where everybody on the committee was Gollum. And,
the imagery here is beautiful.
When I get a metaphor, I go with it. So. I think, but I when I think about ministry together and with Maggie, I think of two people kind of on a journey, and the wind is kind of, in our faces, and we're like holding on for dear life and saying, here we go. The most recent move, we were just talking to some folks in upstairs and saying that, like, our most recent move to Grove City College was a very difficult move, because we thought, We pretty much anticipated when we left Eastern, we'd go south. That's our home and down there. And we haven't lived there since, 1978. Mm. We keep thinking, that's where we're going to go. And we get down there a lot, because we travel a lot. But it's not the same living there. But this was really hard, and I was describing it. I remember when we talked about going to Grove City to teach ministry there. It's on the other side of the state from where we used to live in Philly. And I remember Maggie looked at me like, are you nuts? I hope you know what you're doing. And I remember kind of thinking, well, that's a problem. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the Lord's doing. But I two things. One is, one thing, we've both been Christians long enough to know that God's big plan for us is not to make us happy.
Mm-hmm.
that this is, you know, God calls us to obedience, and there is deep abiding joy in obedience, which we've seen over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But you quite often don't see it until the backside of obedience to the rearview mirror view.
Yeah.
And so I think we both, and I'm really grateful because as a ministry partner, had Maggie, she's always been like, you know, she's going to say, you know, I think this is nuts if that's what she doesn't, maybe you, she doesn't say that, but that's I can tell. She's going to speak honestly about it and be authentic. But she's like, okay, buckle up, let's, you know, let's do this. But the other thing is that, and this speaks to your question about advice, is I think we've always had a lot of laughter in our family with our girls and with us to this day. And I think that's helped immensely.
Oh, a whole lot, yes.
And then, of course, the fact that I know that Maggie loves Jesus and is pursuing Jesus and depth in her life, you know, as long as one of us is. No, I think, you know, but I think that that's also a huge part of it because I know as we're talking about this, we're not talking about it as a worldly calculation. We're talking about the, like, what is, you know, what's the Lord calling us to do here?
Right.
And I think for a couple, that's really important. But yeah, cultivate time together. I mean, we every week, I mean, almost without fail, we have a date where we go to Chick-fil-A and a movie.
Chicken and, a flick.
Yeah, we call it Chicken a Flick Night. Yep. And we almost never miss that. And so I think we really do try to invest time in our relationship together and make sure we're you know, we're really attentive to that. And we have done that all the way. And then as a dad, you know, I took my girls, each girl, to breakfast every other week, all the way from, you know, baby almost all the way through high school. And then when we traveled, I put some limits on how many, you know, when they were just younger girls, it'd be like 1 weekend a month. As they got into middle school and high school, I think we changed it to 2 weekends a month. If somebody wanted a third weekend, I said, well, you got to fly everybody. And they did. We did a lot of great trips together, but
we also took them out of school.
Oh yeah, we
would take them out of school to go with us, and
totally.
And all summer we'd be traveling with him and out and about to all the different camps and conferences, and so that's how they grew up. And the wider church that they've come to know has been such a delight. That it wasn't just this small church and denomination, but the wider church. That has been a great thing. Another word of advice, because from whence I come, the importance of tending to your own soul care, in that as a husband and wife, your husband cannot do this for you. No one can do this for you. This is the intimacy with you and your beloved and God's love for you. You're wanting to really develop that and be with that and work on that, because the importance of your own individual walk. I mean, you were talking to the importance of being together. Absolutely. And spending time together, but the spending time with the one who's created you and knows you best is of utmost importance.
Well, we are definitely up against some time here. There's so much more of the story that we could get into, but we've got time constraints in the room, and they both have other things. We're going to land the plane here, but we have one last thing that we're going to do. So, Steve, take over.
We have a question. This was actually given to us by an audience member.
Okay.
And we're going to try to get you in trouble here a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to do word association.
All right.
All right. So be careful.
All right.
All right. I got three words for you. First one is Mike Iaconelli.
Friend.
You can give a little more.
Oh, okay. well, I mean, I remember the first time, you know, I went to a resource seminar. We used to have these meetings, 1 day meetings, maybe 2 day meetings. And the idea was we plan the session as a team. So first time I walked in the room, it was Jim Burns, Bill McNabb, Rich Van Pelt, Iaconelli, and Wayne Rice, and Tick. And so we would go in there, and those sessions were brutally honest in terms of critique, and I mean a lot of just hard laughter, very very thoughtful conversation. I mean, I learned a lot, and then also great iron sharpening iron in terms of how do you make a seminar work. But I remember the first time I was supposed to present the first day, and they said, okay, we were doing our one-day test. We would test the material before we would go out on the road, because we used to do 96 cities between us, and we'd go out in teams of two. And so we would test the material before we went out. So we'd do, like, we always did Vegas, and we'd do, like, Ventura and maybe San Diego. And I remember they, in my very first one, they said, okay, Duffy, look, you know, Mike's going to start the small group thing, and then you just bring him out of small group and then move to the next part of the day. While I think Tick or somebody was giving me those instructions, they, Iaconelli, told the crowd, when Duffy comes back in and tries to reconvene us, ignore him. You know, just keep talking, just keep talking as if he's not saying anything. Of course, I don't know that, so I go, okay, okay, hey, all right. And, you know, every technique we've all tried to use, you know, where you and then all of a sudden, you know, loud laughter.
Yeah.
But no, those guys, of course, and then very soon, shortly after, we met Chap, Clark, and Doug, and Marv, and Walt, and Jim Burr. I mean, those guys, they've been, and their wives, we've all kind of grown up together, our kids, too. But those guys, and Iaconelli, I mean, they've totally shaped my life and faith and career in wonderful ways.
Two more.
Okay.
You're going to know where they came from. You can answer them as quickly as you can.
Okay.
They're Bob's and Sheena Easton.
So you've been talking to Walt Mueller. Bob's Clam Shack in Kittery, Maine. I go to New England a lot because I teach at Gordon Conwell. You know, Walt Mueller and I teach in the doctoral program there. And then we do the sexuality symposium every year there. And if you're interested, by the way, you can go to the Gordon Conwell website or contact me or Walt. But Bob's, I discovered years and years ago, it's just, they have just the most amazing chowder on the planet.
And lobster rolls.
And lobster rolls.
Mm. Happy day.
Yeah. And I when I go there, I feel, I mean, in my wallet, even as I sit here, I have a Bob's frequent visitor card. And then, Sheena Easton, I had this song. It was about, I don't know, back maybe in the summer or something, but I kept going.
Dun, 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 dun. For over 2 months.
My husband takes the morning train. He works from 9 to 5. That
one? Yeah.
Doggy and I did, you
and
right
I
off the bat.
I couldn't place it. I kept humming parts of it, fragments. And then Walt was in the car one day. We were riding, and I think we were going to dinner or something. And I said, Walt, do you know that? He said, yeah, Sheena Easton morning train. And so I was able to buy it for my iPod. So yeah, it was very fun.
That's awesome.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, let's give Duffy and Maggie a big hand for being on the show today.
Thank you. Yeah, let me just say to all of you guys in here, if you will stop by the Grove City College booth, I would like to give each of you a free book as a gift for coming today.
Awesome. Swag. You knew you stayed for a reason.
I know one of them is speaking to teenagers and the other is Ministry of Nurture. I think they're both in there. And all you have to do is stop by and say I went to the Sherpa podcast, and they'll be happy to give you a free book. So thanks for coming today.
Awesome.
Thank you guys.
For your longevity in ministry. Guys like you inspire me, and I'm grateful to have been a small part of your story. That's a real honor.
Oh, thank you for being such a beautiful part of the youth ministry world. You're truly legends, and you've blessed us today. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm trying to picture this singing group, and then on the beach and on in the cities, and I bet you it was absolutely wild and incredible. It was so cool.
Crazy. I can imagine Duffy with hair.
So, well, there is that. So it was great to hear that story. As we mentioned ahead of time, we really had a shortness of time that was frustrating, partly because of the technical difficulties. But even without the technical difficulties, our slot was pretty small, and Duffy was gracious enough to do the interview, even though he was teaching a breakout seminar right after, and he's got kind of a routine that he's pretty pretty strict about, which I love because he takes that very seriously. So we are going to have to definitely pick this conversation up again.
Yeah, I just hope that anyone listening to this is really blessed just by the faithfulness of their marriage and how it's been a witness to so many other youth workers around them, students that they've interacted with over the years. I mean, their influence on a generation, several generations of youth workers has been enormous. So thanks, Maggie and Duffy, for giving us the time of day and for joining our conversation.
All right. And this is our actual last broadcast of 2019.
It is.
We've gotten through 66 of our regular episodes, countless legends, 2 seasons of Sherpa Shorts.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
Yeah, we'll take a little break for Christmas, but we will be back in January. We have a whole new season. We've got more legends lined up, and we're pretty excited about where the future lies. So.
Oh, yeah, we got some good things in store for 2020. We cannot wait to see where this ride continues to take us. In the meantime, we wish you and your family the merriest of Christmases and happy holidays.
Sherpas
out.